A very good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning is number 07-1126, Sofia Lopez Dimonez et al. Against Bridgestone Firestone. Mr. Price.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Good morning. My name is Gary Price. I'm here with co-counsel Joseph Rampala to ask this Court to vacate an order of sanctions entered by the District Court against Leonel Perez Nieto. There are basically three reasons, at least, as grounds for this relief. First, the District Court did not have personal jurisdiction over an absent, unrepresented, unserved, non-party, each of which would be required as a predicate for the required jurisdiction to issue the challenged order.
Mr. Price, let me ask you this. Suppose, and I realize this wasn't the case, but suppose the expert on Mexican law had been Professor Steven Zamora, who lives in Texas, in Houston, and he had submitted an affidavit about Mexican law, and pretty much everything else was the same. The district court thought that there'd been manipulative behavior or what have you, which I'm sure, you know, I'm being creating a hypothetical here. An expert, in other words, in any other state is also not in Indiana. Why do you think an expert who submits an affidavit in a court has to be treated in a sense as though he or she were a party?
Your Honor, for certain instances of case management, I don't think an expert submitting an affidavit would have to be treated as a party. For example, it was well within the discretion of the district court, either upon motion or sua sponte, to enter an order pursuant to the rules of evidence or her inherent authority to strike the affidavit, considered of no consequence, and proceed with the management of the case. What's different in this case is the district court reached out to an absent, unrepresented, non-served, non-party, and imposed what appears to be in the nature of not remedial but punitive sanctions.
But there are other cases. I mean, I know you have your kind of your litany of not served, et cetera, but there are other cases in which courts find that expert witnesses, in a sense, commit contempts of court. They do something wrong. There are medical malpractice cases where there are expert witnesses. There are all kinds of cases. And if your position is that a district court has no authority to enforce its orders against such a person who is participating in that capacity in litigation, I would think you would have cases, even just from the United States context, that would say so. And I haven't been able to find any.
Nor would I expect you to, Your Honor. But again, I think we're talking about indirect contempt and or direct contempt proceedings. If, for example, the hypothetical expert witness was on the witness stand in front of the district court in a evidentiary hearing or other proceeding. Again,
but why does that matter if our hypothetical expert witness, you know, Professor X, submitted an affidavit to the district court? What I'm trying to get at maybe one fundamental point. I don't see what is the difference in this particular instance between our expert, Dr. Perez Nieto, who is in Mexico, and any other expert who might have committed a similar alleged course of action. I realize you have your defenses on the merits as well, and I'm not addressing those right now. But if you're trying to say district courts have no power to protect the integrity of their proceedings from expert witnesses, I would be surprised to find authority for that.
In Your Honor, again, I think that may segue into the nature of the inherent authority of district courts. I would note that a case that we cited from the Seventh Circuit, U.S. versus Kirchenbaum, says, quote, even a third-party aider and abettor must have her day in court. And I think that is the essence of this case. Perez Nieto never had his day in court.
Well, but the question then, I'm not sure that that fully answers it, because once you are involved in a lawsuit as an expert, you are presumptively, I would think, beyond the need for Rule 4 type of service. The question then does become fundamental due process. Has the person been told in a way that is likely to receive him, to reach him or her, about what's going on, and surely Dr. Perez Nieto did know what was happening in these cases.
Well, with respect, Your Honor, I disagree, and now is not the time or place to exercise hindsight on what the American lawyers, as they've come to be called, did or didn't do. But I respectfully submit, when I got involved in the case and talked to Dr. Perez Nieto, he was woefully and inadequately informed of his role, the consequences of his role, American law. And at that point, I think the court could take judicial notice that there was an actual conflict of interest between the American lawyers who had retained Perez Nieto and Perez Nieto himself. So
did he move to vacate in any way? Did he actually submit these issues to the district court for her adjudication?
Your Honor, by the time I got involved in the case, I did file a motion to reconsider, but we were really between the rock and the hard place. There was really insufficient time, I think, for any district court to properly consider the motion to reconsider, given the fact that we had the deadline for filing the notice of appeal to preserve our ability to be before this forum today. So that's a long way of saying, yes, we tried. There simply wasn't enough time. And as the court may or may not have reviewed, we did submit an affidavit, which for the first time was an affidavit in which Mr. Perez Nieto said not only is English not my second
language,
third
yeah.
language.
Yes.
And in which I very plainly made clear in his affidavit that I had to assist him greatly in formulating an affidavit that I believed would be plain to the understanding for those of us whose first language is English and don't have the benefit of a second language. The second point, and I alluded to this, about the inherent authority of the court, I think perhaps this goes to the distinction that you were talking about in terms of what difference does it make whether the expert came from Mexico, Canada, or New Jersey? And I think in this instance, it's very simply that the motion was filed under 1927, the rules of discovery, and the inherent jurisdictional authority of the court to control its own docket and its own proceedings. I respectfully submit that that inherent authority stops at the borders of the United States or any of its protected territories.
But if Dr. Perez Nieto had never filed anything with the court, I think you would be on very firm ground. If the court had somehow reached out and maybe he'd published a book in Mexico or somehow had said something and the court had reached out. But Dr. Perez Nieto actually has a very impressive resume, and he did submit things to the district court, which by that very act of doing so puts him within the district court's authority, doesn't it?
Your Honor, two things. As I alluded, it puts it within the district court's authority for certain case management tools that were available to the court, like motions to strike, either on motion or sua sponte. However, and again, this is critical, the actions of the American lawyers have to stand on their own.
Well, that's true, but I'm just trying to press the principle that you're arguing for. Suppose, again, hypothetically, suppose an expert witness in Mexico filed something with a district court in Indiana that was an out-and-out fraud. Are you telling me that the only thing that the district court in Indiana could do would be to strike that, or do you think that the effort to commit a fraud on the court might entitle the court to impose a monetary fine?
In essence, that's exactly what happened in this case. The court did strike it and imposed a monetary fine on the American lawyers who submitted that affidavit.
Well, but I'm asking you, you're saying, if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying that no matter what the Mexican national does, the court is powerless, even if the Mexican national, and I'm trying to be vague here in a sense, because the rule you're asking us to create would apply not just to Dr. Perez Nieto, but to the next and the next and the next foreign expert, that you're saying that no matter how abusive the document a foreign expert files in a capacity as an expert with a district court in the United States, there's no power to do anything but strike that document. That seems to be what you're saying to me.
and I apologize if I misled the court. As you'll notice from our briefing, we have said there are other procedures. There are other compacts. There are conventions. There's international law. I think, for example, the district court, in the hypothetical instance that you've suggested, could refer the matter to the United States attorney for that district, who could then initiate proceedings, use the Hague Convention, first of all, to establish an appropriate procedure to obtain jurisdiction over a foreign national, wherever that person may be located, and then to enlist the aid of the appropriate authorities in the foreign country to, if appropriate, under the laws of that foreign nation, in comity with our laws, sanction that individual, whether those sanctions be monetary, non-economic, or otherwise.
I mean, that seems like a much more drastic procedure to me from the point of view of the foreign national than just a fine from a district court. I mean, you're inviting, you know, Hague Service Convention procedures, which, by the way, are only available in civil and commercial matters. They don't extend to criminal issues. I don't know. I mean, but if you're saying essentially you've got to conduct whatever remedial measures there are in the foreign country, then I'll take that as your answer.
And I would put a finer point on it, Your Honor. I'm saying that there has to be notice and an opportunity to be heard. And if that means invoking the Hague Evidence Convention or whatever, then that's the exercise that we have to go through. And I think part and parcel that requires the assistance of the lawyers in the case who would aid the district court in that process. I'm not advocating that a district court put on the hat of a litigator or advocate, but it can issue the appropriate orders to see that the appropriate procedures are followed so that an individual can be properly hailed before an appropriate jurisdiction and given minimal due process and be allowed to respond before any kind of sanction is ordered. And I noticed the white light is on, so I will retire. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Price. We'll hear now from Mr. Morgan.
May it please the court. I'm Craig Morgan, representing Appalee's Ford Motor Company and Bridgestone Firestone Tire. We ask the court to adopt the following rule, that when a non-party voluntarily injects himself into a federal court proceeding and attempts to deceive the court with fabricated evidence in order to affect the outcome of that proceeding, he thereby subjects himself to the inherent authority of the court to impose sanctions for attempting a fraud on that court.
Even if that's the rule, no court should impose sanctions until it's certain that the person who is going to be the subject of those sanctions has been notified fairly of what it is he's accused of and has had an opportunity to explain himself. And as I understand it here, Dr. Perez Nieto continues to believe that what he said about Mexican law was correct, that the Mexican courts don't take these cases, whether it's the court in Morelos or whether it's the court in Veracruz or wherever it may be. Would you review for us exactly what notice Dr. Perez Nieto got of these accusations against him and what opportunity he had to respond?
Yes, Your Honor, I will. In June of, well, in June of, excuse me, no, I'm wrong, in July of 2006, following a year of discovery after this court's remand, Ford and Firestone filed a motion for sanctions against Perez Nieto, naming him individually and itemizing the evidence in front against him, including and supporting it with two volumes of exhibits. That was served on the plaintiff's U.S. lawyers, which is...
But this was not Dr. Perez Nieto's lawyer. These were the plaintiff's lawyers,
That's
right?
True, Your Honor, but he was their expert. They are the ones who hired him, and that is typically the procedure by which one serves like a notice of deposition on an opposing expert witness. You serve it on the opposing party's lawyers. That's just the way it's done.
So in his capacity as the agent of the lawyers, you're saying he essentially received notice through the plaintiff's lawyers.
That's correct, Your Honor. Furthermore, he filed an affidavit with his motion for relief that expressly said that he was aware of the motion for sanctions but chose to ignore it. And it was, this was not a man who was caught flat-footed by a sua sponte sanctions order. It was, that motion was filed in July of 2006. It was 5 months later that the sanctions was granted. The sanctions motions were, was granted. Sanction, the sanctions were imposed.
Sanctions were imposed.
It wasn't until a month later that he filed a motion for relief. It was the first time he acknowledged that motion at all.
But you're satisfied that from the wording of his motion for relief that he knew before the sanctions were imposed what exactly he was accused of and what risk he ran by not responding?
Well, I'm sure he will contend that he did not understand the risk he ran by not responding. But the point is that his affidavit, sworn statement, says that he was aware of the motion for sanctions and chose not to respond based upon the advice he got from the U.S. lawyers that he was beyond the reach of the court.
What U.S. lawyers?
The U.S. lawyers who were also subject to sanctions.
They
were,
and who represented whom?
Represented Sofia Lopez de Menez in the district court proceeding. Mr. Perez Nieto, as it turns out, was not only the expert witness in that they hired for presentation of Mexican law in the district court, but he was also Sofia Lopez de Menez's lawyer in the Mexican proceeding.
Now, could I ask you, this is along the same lines as what I was trying to explore with Mr. Price. I think it would be very helpful to me, at least, to consider this case against the backdrop of the more ordinary kind of case where we don't have the complication of another country involved, but maybe it's just another state. And what you just said was that if you had a problem with an expert witness and that expert witness was located in Texas or California or some other place, that you would serve the lawyers for the party on whose side the expert was appearing, let's say the plaintiffs in this instance, and you wouldn't directly serve that expert. I mean, do you have case authority that spells out that that's the proper way to do this?
In the context of a motion for sanctions?
Mm-hmm.
No, Your Honor. Neither side has, in this dispute, in this appeal, has found a case directly on point. That's why this court will either adopt the rule we propose or the one that Mr. Perez Nieto proposes. And my understanding from...
But you're extending this from the idea that a notice of a deposition for an expert would first be served on the plaintiff's lawyers, if it's the plaintiff's expert, for example.
That's correct. In fact, it's been my experience that some judges deem it improper to have a direct contact with an opposing expert witness, that you go through the lawyer who retained them. Plus, here we have the advantage of an affidavit by which Perez Nieto himself acknowledges awareness of that motion. And furthermore, in response to the question that the court asked opposing counsel, Perez Nieto's motion for sanctions did not raise any of those notice issues. But his motion for relief from sanctions did not raise any of those notice issues. What he did was contend that he was beyond the reach of the court because he was not a party, that he had not violated any court order, and he'd never been personally served in the Hague Convention. He didn't complain about lack of notice. His affidavit said he was aware of the motion. The rule that he asks this court to adopt, when stated plainly, should collapse under its own weight. He asks the rule to be that when a foreign national voluntarily injects himself into a United States federal court proceeding as an expert witness and attempts to deceive the court with fabricated evidence in order to affect the outcome of that proceeding, he remains beyond the authority of the court to sanction him. Now, that's just wrong. Now, it's inconsistent with all the precedents that recognize the inherent power of the federal court to protect themselves from fraud and to protect the integrity of their proceedings, and it just doesn't make good sense to carve out an exception for someone in that capacity who can attempt to defraud the court. There are four key facts that compel the adoption of our rule on its application here to affirm this sanctions order. The first is that Perez Nieto was directly involved in staging a sham proceeding in Morelos, Mexico, that was intentionally manipulated to produce a dismissal order that he could then use to present to this court in an effort to get the plaintiff's case back into the courts of the United States. Second, once he got that dismissal order, posturing himself as an independent expert witness, Perez Nieto then filed an affidavit and presented that dismissal order from Morales to this court as a legitimate decision, allegedly proving the futility of a good-faith attempt to pursue the plaintiff's claims in Mexico. He accompanied that with an affidavit that so represented that decision and that failed to disclose his personal involvement in obtaining that Morales decision and failed to disclose the fact that he had a personal financial interest by way of a 10% contingent fee in the plaintiff's recovery, which would obviously be higher if he succeeded in getting the case tried in the United States. Third, the filing of that motion, of that affidavit and that order in this court succeeded in what they wanted to do, which was to prevent this court from affirming the district court's dismissal of the plaintiff's case for forum nonconvenience. This court instead vacated that dismissal and remanded for further proceedings to investigate that Mexican proceeding. That went on for another year. Actually, we're now going on 2 years now. And the fourth point is that after the defendants filed a motion for sanctions, a year after learning all the evidence that disclosed this manipulation, Perez Nieto had notice of the motion for sanctions and chose to ignore it.
Now, I want to get back actually to my analogy to domestic proceedings. In other cases, I mean, I really find it hard to believe in the history of American litigation there's never been a problem with an expert witness, but maybe there hasn't. But it seems to me...
Look, Your Honor, we haven't found one like this.
Well, maybe not like this, but in domestic proceedings, I am not familiar with the idea that Rule 4 would be the rule that you would use in a federal court to notify that expert that there was some problem afoot, that there was a possibility that the expert's testimony might be struck, that there was a possibility that the expert might be fined. There are cases, in fact, where experts have been fined. And if Rule 4 isn't the right rule, if it's really a Rule 5 situation, then by parity of reasoning, the Hague Service Convention is also not the right rule, because the Hague Service Convention deals with substitutes for service of process when you're dealing with a Hague Convention country, which is more or less what you have argued, you know, that whatever else may be the way of notifying Dr. Perez Nieto, the Hague Service Convention wouldn't be it unless you always use Rule 4.
That's correct.
But I don't think you do.
No, Your Honor. I mean, those procedures typically are intended for non-parties, you know, additional defendants, third-party defendants, and so forth, not
right.
People who have chosen to inject themselves into the proceeding to submit evidence that turns out to be fabricated in an attempt to defraud the court for personal financial gain. And that is what happened here. The evidence we've outlined in our brief on pages 5 through 25 conclusively prove, it seems to me, that Judge Barker was fully justified in determining that that's exactly what Perez Nieto did here.
By the way, I mean, Judge Barker discusses this quite a bit in her order. Are we looking at this as abuse of discretion review, do you think, or clear error, or what standard of review are you advocating?
Well, certainly for her factual determinations, it's abuse of discretion. For the question of the jurisdiction of the court, we believe that's de novo. That's for that reason we asked this court to adopt the rule we outlined at the outset. And the curious thing is about these facts that are outlined in 5 through 25 of our brief, not only can it not reasonably be said that in the face of that evidence it was an abuse of discretion for Judge Barker to determine that Perez Nieto attempted a fraud on the court, but Perez Nieto does not try to so argue. He does not try to argue that he was not guilty of the fraud on the court. He makes no attempt to try to say this Morales proceeding was legitimate or to deny that he was involved in fabricating it. That should end the matter. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. How much time does Mr. Price have? Thank you. 3 minutes, sir.
With respect to the tribunal, I'm not going to attempt to respond to the facts, because I think what we have in the fact record is what occurs when an adversary system literally goes off the rails and we have one side building a record without the benefit of advocacy, of counsel, notice, and opportunity to be heard, the bedrock of our American judicial system. I'm not asking this tribunal to issue or rewrite any new rule. I'm asking the court to recognize what's been the law of the land for hundreds of years.
But your opponent argues that Dr. Perez Nieto knew perfectly well that he was accused of this and indeed so admitted in his affidavit. Why is Rule 4 type or Hague Service Convention type service necessary here?
For one reason, and you heard it from my opposing counsel, we seem to be intermixing the role of their alleged role of Dr. Perez Nieto as an expert who interjected himself and the role of Dr. Perez Nieto as a Mexican attorney practicing law in Mexico, which is outside of the jurisdiction.
I mean, I totally agree with you on that point, but I think our focus is precisely on Dr. Perez Nieto's role as an expert on Mexican law. I mean, you could be an expert on engineering. He's an expert on what he's an expert in, but it's his role as an expert in the courts of the United States. And if that gives rise to problems, surely district courts have some inherent authority to address that. You seem to say, yes, they do have an inherent authority, but the scope of permissible remedies is more restricted than this district court thought it was.
Especially when one considers the inherent authority. The case law is clear that on review, this court should take special consideration and notice of what was going on and what the balance was, and were there lesser remedies, more narrowly focused to the issues in hand, than what happened in this case. And frankly, what bothers me in this case is that the district court said, I'm going to carve out the sanctions. We're not going to deal with it at this time. I'm not going to mousetrap you. You are all going to have an opportunity to be heard. And then somehow on December 6th, a deposition from a Texas state court action gets submitted as evidence with no notice to anybody, and especially Perez Nieto. And then without even honoring the local rules, the court then issues this order. I think it's a double violation of minimal due process that the court says one thing, and then we have, if you will, a sub rosa evidentiary hearing, and then the court goes ahead and issues an order that Perez Nieto knew nothing about until he found out not only was he on the hook for $100,000, but that his reputation had literally been taken from him without an opportunity to appear before anybody with a lawyer to represent him. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy, but I'm going to sit down. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.